Good morning. Thank you for being here. On September 28, 2014, Thomas Eric Duncan was admitted to Texas Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas and was subsequently diagnosed as the first confirmed case of Ebola in the United States. In the ensuing days and weeks, Texans from every walk of life expressed understandable fear and confusion regarding the ability of their government to appropriately respond to an infectious disease of such a serious nature. Less than a week after the initial diagnosis, former Governor Rick Perry assembled the Texas Task Force on Infectious Disease Preparedness and Response, a team of some of the best and brightest minds the state of Texas has to offer. Shortly thereafter, I called the Senate Committee on Health and Human Services into an urgent meeting to hear from state public health officials and other medical experts in order to increase education on the medical facts of Ebola, calm the public fear, and outline what steps were being taken to address this crisis quickly and definitively. Responding to this challenge required the collaboration of countless public health officials from state, federal, and local governments in order to effectively isolate, contain, and address this disease. However, during the preliminary assessment of our state's public health response, a number of opportunities for improvement quickly became apparent. On December 1st, the Texas Task Force on Infectious Disease and Preparedness and Response issued its final report detailing what steps need to be taken in order to ensure the state of Texas is prepared to respond, not only to Ebola, but rather to all infectious disease threats that similarly pose a clear and present danger to the health and safety of Texas families. Based on those recommendations, Senate Bill 538 was developed to address some of the weaknesses in our public health response and ensure the state of Texas is better prepared to protect its citizens moving forward. Senate Bill 538 represents the next step in protecting Texans against infectious disease threats like Ebola, and Texas is not going to rest just because the crisis of the moment has abated. I'd like to thank the members of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee for their remarkable outpouring of bipartisan support they've expressed for this legislation and for joining me here today. I'd like to recognize Vice Chair Colhurst, Senator Perry, Senator Rodriguez, Senator Taylor, Senator Uresti, as well as Commissioner Kirk Cole from the Department of State Health Services, and I'll be introducing Dr. Brett Jawar here in a second. I'd also like to take this opportunity to acknowledge the former Department of State Health Services Commissioner, Dr. David Lakey, as well as the entire staff of the Department of State Health Services for their calm and professional response during this crisis. Finally, I'd like to thank the members of the Texas Task Force on Infectious Disease Preparedness and Response for the remarkable work they've done identifying new opportunities to improve our state's public health infrastructure and ensure that Texas is better prepared to respond to similar infectious disease outbreaks in the future. The bottom line is, protecting the public health and safety of Texas families is the highest responsibility of the state of Texas, and I can assure you is the highest possible priority of the members of this committee. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to the chairman of the task force, Dr. Brett Jawar, to walk us through some of the specific recommendations offered by the task force and discuss how they've become incorporated into this legislation. Afterwards, we'll both be able to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Good morning. I would first like to express the task force's appreciation to Senator Schwertner and all the senators behind me for their leadership on this critical issue and for inviting me here to represent the members of the task force. On September 30th, the first case of Ebola was diagnosed in the United States on our home soil of Texas. By November 7th, Texas was designated Ebola-free. But those 38 days highlighted the state's leadership and focus on evidence-based policy and decision-making, and also the heroism of our healthcare workers, public health professionals, emergency responders, and countless others. But as our task force noted in our December 1st report, like all other disasters, whether a hurricane or a wildfire, this emergency highlighted needs for profound changes in our training, in our preparedness, our protocols, and even the structure and power of our local and state officials in terms of their ability to respond to the crisis. Some of the issues required immediate expert response and implementation, and those recommendations were done immediately. For example, the state designation of specific hospitals equipped for the treatment and care of diagnosed Ebola patients. Texas led the nation with this step and rectified a previous national misconception that any hospital would be equipped to handle highly infectious diseases. Another recommendation immediately implemented was a revised triage assessment, which enabled Texas hospitals to better detect patients at risk for Ebola. But even with these initial steps, much work remains to ensure our state is safe, and that is why the task force is so appreciative of the work of Dr. Schwertner and these senators for Senate Bill 538. Unlike many states around the country still, and in my opinion, the federal government itself, Senator Schwertner and his colleagues have taken to heart the lessons learned and the reality that we will have another infectious disease challenge in Texas. It may be Ebola, or it may be any of a number of other infectious diseases known now or unknown until the future that could potentially ravage our state if we are not better prepared. This concern and leadership was also evident by Governor Abbott, who sought briefings from the task force immediately upon his election, demonstrating his prioritization of the safety of Texans. Throughout this crisis, Senator Schwertner and his committee closely monitored the developments as the situation evolved. He and his staff and other senators dissected and assessed the task force report, spent numerous hours with me, and that is numerous hours with me, and members of the task force to assure that there was complete understanding of our intent, recommendations, and opportunities. So let me highlight some of the key provisions in this bill as we see it from the task force. First, a provision enabling the governor to declare a state of infectious disease emergency, which will allow the appropriate resources and expertise to flow to a local infectious disease emergency before it can threaten the entire state or perhaps the nation. There are several critical provisions that minimize the risk to public and first responders during the management of a highly infectious disease patient, including the creation of a stockpile of personal protective equipment, that is the gear one wears to protect against infectivity, and to evaluate numerous options for new technology relating to tracking of exposed contacts. There are provisions for the state health authorities to stop a transportation carrier in order to attain more information concerning exposed or infected individuals, which will allow adequate time for appropriate containment and treatment and protection of the general public. There are several provisions related to the appropriate care and management of pets and livestock, including enhanced training and interaction with state agencies and the ability to perform laboratory tests. There is also the granting of the state's chief physician the ability, under very specific protections and standards, to issue a control order that is enforceable before it is violated. Now, let me explain just for a few seconds what that means. Under current law, the state's chief physician can issue a control order for a potentially exposed or infectious person to remain in their home. But that control order is not enforced until the person breaks that control order. And it is very critical that that person is not enforced after they've been to school or to the state fair or on public transportation and exposed many individuals. This was a critical part of the task force that was highlighted during this outbreak. The bill also makes the Department of State Health Services accountable for implementing recommendations and submitting periodic reports to the state readiness to the legislature. And finally, the bill does establish the task force as an ongoing advisory body to the governor. I can speak on behalf of all the members of the task force that we welcome this challenge and the opportunity to continue serving our state. And I personally appreciate the leadership of Dr. Schwertner and of all these elected officials who are committed to the long-term safety and prosperity of Texas. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jawar. Any questions?
On the enforcement, you say the state's top physician, is that the head of DSHS that you referred to there?
As it's in its current iteration, yes, that would have been the state's chief health officer, the head of DSHS. Yes, ma'am.
Somebody flying in, you know, could you describe the conditions?
Let me provide a little context. There's a long history in Texas, and it works very well that physicians, any physician, and appropriate authorities can temporarily detain a person who is mentally ill, who is at risk of harming someone else. This is done on a regular basis. Now, in contrast, even the state's top doctor can't enforce a person staying in the home who's potentially infectious with Ebola. And we're not even talking about the eerie or hard scenarios where you might have a person with ill intent who wants to go out and spread the disease. So that can't be done now. So all we're talking about is the control orders that are issued now by the state's top doctor being enforceable before the person breaks the control order. Right now they're enforceable, but only after they break the control order and you have to go to a judge and get that brought back in. So that is all this is doing, is allowing enforcement before the order is broken and potentially if thousands of other people are put at risk for the disease.
And the people that it would be enforced upon are?
Those who are deemed by the chief public health authorities as being at high risk or at risk of transmitting a disease or potentially transmitting the disease to a number of people in the public. Again, this legislation, as I understand it, really does not designate all the categories, but clearly the intent is, for example, a person who is exposed and at high risk of developing Ebola that is under a control order to stay in their home. It's meant to enforce that. So they really have to stay in their home. They're not allowed to go to the state fair or get on buses or major transportation before you can enforce that order. I think this is a very common sense, very measured statute, particularly compared to all the mentally ill enforcement statutes that we have in the state. We had a lot of debate about this, and again, the task force felt this was critically important, and you saw some of the issues that that occurred in the past outbreak because of potentially because of the lack of this ability.
Could you give us some examples of how, if this bill, these provisions were in place before what we saw happen in Dallas, how things may have played out a little bit differently with these options here?
Well, I think we'd be much better prepared. We'd have a clear line of authority. There would be stockpiles of personal protective equipment. First responders would be able to know when they were going to have to serve or protect or be around individuals with potentially infectious disease, a serious infectious disease, deadly infectious disease. So this clears up a lot of the problems. This bill speaks to a lot of the problems that were manifest with the response of Texas and our nation to the Ebola cases in Dallas.
What were some of the problems that you guys saw in the response in Dallas?
Well, lines of authority were probably the most obvious immediately. The lack of personal protective equipment, the lack of medical transportation of the waste, or transportation of the waste, storage of medical waste, testing of potential animals that had been exposed. There were a whole slew of, a whole list of concerns that were raised at various times during the August to September period. And this bill speaks to those concerns. Other questions? Transportation? Yeah, I was talking about transportation of waste in particular.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
There was a lot of controversy about people who flew on a plane with somebody who had symptoms of Ebola, mm-hmm. and whether or not such people should be detained in their homes, from school, whatever. Does this bill address that in any way? And what should be the response to people who aren't directly exposed to an ill person's bodily fluids?
Okay. As I see it from the task force, let me answer it in two different ways. This bill, although based on the Ebola emergency, is not an Ebola bill. This is preparation for any infectious disease emergency in the future. So it not only doesn't do this, but it would be inappropriate to try to list, okay, this is going to happen when this person's on a plane under these symptoms. That is not what this is for. This still leaves those types of decisions in the hands of the infectious disease experts who are in control of the situation and have to evaluate whether it's Ebola, whether it's Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, whether it's Nipah virus, whatever it's going to be, the structures are in place to handle that. Your second question, I will just answer specifically, is, again, the best evidence, as is borne out by the Ebola outbreak in Africa, as well as our emergency here, is Ebola is only transmittable by direct contact with secretions of a person who is infected or dead from Ebola. That even the risk of airplane co-transportation is very, very small. And as you know, Mr. Duncan's family, who lived in the household, none of them developed the disease, which is a typical pattern. So the science still bears out what was said in the Ebola outbreak. And as we gain more and more evidence to that, we become more and more certain, although there's never 100% certainty in biology. But again, this bill, in my view, is not an Ebola bill. It's a bill to protect against whatever the infectious diseases are. And I think they've taken the recommendations, adapted them, so that structure is there in the future.
I'll just sum it up there with, this is a reactive to what we saw in Dallas with the Ebola cases, but proactive to address any potential emerging infectious disease threat of a serious nature in the future that affects Texas families. Last question.
I wonder if you could both speak to the idea that Texas has learned lessons that the rest of the country and the federal government did not take to heart from the Ebola crisis. Can you give us more?
I believe this bill is a clear example of that, that we as Texans, as the Committee of Senate Health and Human Services, take the protection of Texas families and Texas communities very seriously. And we are trying to address the concerns raised last fall. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.